Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments, and closing costs online in real time? Rocket can. 1 hour from now, Mothership at the Movies takes a stab at the Sandlot. Baseball classic, especially perfect for 4th of July weekend since there's a cool scene about playing underneath the fireworks on the 4th of July in the Sandlot. So we'll begin part one of our breakdown coming up an hour from now. Part two comes up an hour number four. And then the fuller deep dive as part of the PGP, the Permission Granted Podcast, which we will tape after the show today. Coming up later on this hour, we've got your best audio of the day in 20 minutes. And in 40 minutes, we've got a champ and a chump. But let's start this hour with a list from CBSSports.com as they ranked the top 10 NFL head coaches. This was done by the CBSSports.com team. And here is where they went with the list. Top 10 current NFL head coaches. I think you can guess number one. Number 10 was the Vikings' Mike Zimmer. Vikings getting to the playoffs last year, winning a playoff game, losing in the divisional round in San Francisco. Number nine, Doug Peterson, Eagles, Super Bowl winning head coach. Number eight, Pete Carroll, the Seahawks. I would venture that this is low for Pete Carroll at number eight. I think he's higher than that. Number seven, Mike Tomlin. So here you have two guys who have gone to two Super Bowls and 1-1 at 7 and 8, Mike Tomlin at 7. Number 6, Sean McVay, who last year missed the playoffs altogether, is 0-1 in Super Bowls. Number 5 is Kyle Shanahan, who last year lost his lead in the Super Bowl. Number 4, Sean Payton with the Saints. Number 3, the Ravens' John Harbaugh. Number 2, Super Bowl champion Andy Reid. And number 1, of course, Bill Belichick. Now, any of those 10 head coaches you can't really go wrong with right now. If you were going into this season with any of those 10 head coaches, I think you're relatively confident. You're relatively confident that your team is going to be well coached and positioned to make the playoffs and potentially a deep run. None of those coaches, I think, right now from those fan bases are saying, man, we are overmatched, outwitted on Sundays. All 10 of those guys are solid. But I have to say that maybe this list is made simply to get people talking, but I find it relatively silly to play Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan over Mike Tomlin and Pete Carroll. I really do. And I think that this is a classic case of the hot, sexy new thing is always more interesting than the old thing. Okay, I realize Mike Tomlin has not been to a Super Bowl in 10 years. And I realize that after back-to-back appearances in that Super Bowl or in a Super Bowl, the Seahawks haven't been back there yet either under Pete Carroll. But one season, and I loved what Kyle Shanahan did last season, 1 year of leading a franchise like the Niners to glory is not enough for me to place him in the top five of the coaches yet. Do I like his trajectory? Absolutely. Do I love what he did with the Falcons as the OC their Super Bowl year? No question about it. Was Shanahan's use of everything and managing of everything last year obviously a very encouraging sign of years to come for the Niners? No question. But I'm not putting Kyle Shanahan as my fifth best coach in the NFL yet. I mean, if this year the Niners suddenly go 7-9, which is not out of the realm of possibility, are we still putting Kyle Shanahan at number five? That's such a flavor of the week ranking. And number six, Sean McVay. Look, McVay has taken over that roster, that franchise, and very obviously put his stamp on it. You had Jeff Fisher there for years, 500 Fisher, they're 7-9, they're 8-8, they're just always mediocre or average. And Sean McVay takes over and suddenly the thing sings. They go to the playoffs. They win the division. The next year they go to the Super Bowl. And Sean McVay memorizes all of these plays. He's got this Mensa-style brain. I mean, look, there's a lot to like about Sean McVay. I certainly wouldn't mind having him as my head coach. But Sean McVay's been a head coach for 3 years now. And last year, with a Super Bowl favorite, missed the playoffs. And no offense to Sean McVay, but he's handed one of the most talented teams in football every single year. They spend buku bucks on the Rams roster. They re-sign and give extensions to everybody. And they're trading for major talent. They traded for Jalen Ramsey. They've had Aqib Talib and Marcus Peters. They have Aaron Donald and signed him to big money. They gave Jared Goff a ton of cash. They gave Todd Gurley a ton of cash. They keep bringing in wide receivers like Sammy Watkins and Cooper Kupp and others for targets for Jared Goff. I mean, let's face it. It's not like Sean McVay has an empty cupboard and he's got one hand tied behind his back trying to win the NFC West. I just think putting McVay at six and Shanahan at five is such a reaction. And look, I know there's a lot of Steelers fans that are frustrated that they haven't been back to a Super Bowl in 10 years. And the Steelers have had some really good, talented teams. But seeing what Mike Tomlin did last year with Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges for 15 games and nearly making the playoffs when the offense essentially couldn't score more than 13 points was pretty damn impressive. Okay, and his quarterback went crazy, no helmet, getting smashed in the head with a helmet by Myles Garrett. I mean, that's apparently your leader of the clubhouse, leader in the locker room. Tomlin at number seven is so disrespectful. And Pete Carroll at number eight is disrespectful as well. Pete Carroll has been doing this for 10 years in Seattle. And every year, they're a Super Bowl contender. And they have lost piece after piece after piece on the defense. They've had to disassemble the defense to keep Russell Wilson basically employed, to keep, you know, the payroll balanced, but they've lost Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor and Richard Sherman and go down the list, Cliff Averill, on and on and on it goes. They constantly have to retool. They don't have great wide receivers. Marshawn Lynch moved on as well. And the Seahawks just keep pumping out playoff seasons. You're going to put Pete Carroll eight and Mike Tomlin seven? And put a one-year wonder in Kyle Shanahan at number five? And Sean McVay's been a head coach for three seasons, one of which he missed the playoffs. The other, he did not even win a playoff game. And the year he went to the Super Bowl was gifted that because of the no call and the pass interference at the Superdome, and Sean McVay is going to rank ahead of Mike Tomlin and Pete Carroll. I mean, I just think it's so disrespectful. I've got no problem with Belichick at one, no problem with Andy Reid at two, John Harbaugh at three. I mean, look, I love John Harbaugh, so it's hard to argue. I might put Sean Payton at three, but look, that top four is really solid. But my goodness, Shanahan five, McVay six, before I get to Tomlin and Pete Carroll. Please. I like their upward mobility on this ranking. I like what their future might hold, but I can't put Shanahan and McVay, the Wonder Twins. We might as well put, you know, Cliff Kingsbury at number 11 on this list. Not yet. Not yet. Not ahead of Pete Carroll and Mike Tomlin. Out of those two guys, Mraz, who do you like better, Carroll or Tomlin?
I still go Carroll because I do think Pete Carroll has been more consistent over the last 10 years. I mean, we forget. That was Pete Carroll taking that team to win a Super Bowl, obviously with the defense they had. And when the defense broke up and he rode it with Russell Wilson, there were a lot of people that questioned it. And Russell Wilson's obviously one of the best quarterbacks in football now. Pete Carroll has kept that locker room together, pushed all the right buttons through some really tumultuous times, including throwing away that Super Bowl, which was on the coaching staff as well. And I think that's actually a credit to Pete Carroll as a head coach. And I know Mike Tomlin, you know, it hasn't been easy when you have guys like Antonio Brown and company. So I would say by a smidge, give me Pete Carroll. But all those guys, by the way, those two should rank five and six, and that should be your top six before we even have a conversation about that next group.
Yeah, what are we doing putting Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan, who have been in the league for less than 3 years as head coaches, ahead of two guys that have been to multiple Super Bowls?
Yeah. Sean McVay is supposed to be an offensive wizard, and when his team and his offense got to a Super Bowl versus Bill Belichick, they basically barely scored. When you look at a guy like Pete Carroll, who went to a Super Bowl versus Bill Belichick, he's on the verge of the right play call from beating Bill Belichick and scoring no problem against the Patriots as well. So, again, just if you want to try to compare and contrast coaching styles versus other great coaches, I know that Pete Carroll can stare Bill Belichick in the eye and take him down. I'm not sure of that with Sean McVay when you consider what Sean McVay's strength should be.
I think that's absolutely right, that in that Super Bowl, we saw Sean McVay wilt. And Pete Carroll, look, they made the wrong play call at the goal line. No matter how many times they say it was the right read, we got the right defense we wanted, it was the wrong play call, ends up losing the Super Bowl. That team was never the same. But there's no way on a Sunday, Bill Belichick versus Pete Carroll, whether it's regular season or playoffs or the Super Bowl, you feel like Pete Carroll can't win that football game. I mean, they are equals in each other's eyes. Here's what you also realize. Once you get past 10, there's a steep drop-off. The other 22 head coaches of the NFL, yikes. Because on this list, CBSSports.com said Mike Zimmer was 10. The next three coaches would have been Bruce Arians, Sean McDermott, and Mike Vrabel. Woo!
I mean, Arians is a good coach. Aaron's a good coach. I know that everybody wants to forget about him too. My number 11 would have to be Mike McCarthy as well. Guy did win a Super Bowl.
We're not even putting John Gruden at number 11.
You forget about Gruden as well. Gruden and McCarthy, I actually would take both those guys over Zimmer.
I don't know if I would take them over Zimmer. Zimmer's a good coach. Zimmer steadies the waters. Zimmer always has a good defense. Zimmer, I don't think, loses you games. Zimmer's quarterback is Kirk Cousins. His quarterback
a couple of years ago. That was the best argument you had. He's been successful with Kirk Cousins.
And Case Keenum.
Right. I mean, those guys should be there. But you can't, Vrabel, I couldn't stand before last year. He did a great job. But again, I can't catapult him in the top 15 because he finally had a year where we went to the AFC title game. There's been a guy who's been all over the place. I don't that you're right. It is a whole hodgepodge. I don't know how you don't put Joe Judge at least number 11 or 12 either at this point. That really shocks me. But as long as Adam Gase is at the back end of the list, I think we're okay.
Okay, but isn't it interesting that this list would prefer Sean McDermott, who I think is a good coach? I don't know if he's a great coach. I don't know if I would put him at number 11 or 12 yet. I think Mike Vrabel had a good season. I don't know if I would put him at number 11 or 12. We were ignoring, as I said, John Gruden. How about also Ron Rivera?
Great one.
Is Ron Rivera not a top 11 or 12 head coach of the NFL?
But see, I think I go the same route with McCarthy that I do Ron Rivera. It's almost like this list is punishing guys for getting the axe where they were already successful. Ron Rivera going to a Super Bowl and Mike McCarthy winning a Super Bowl. Yeah, those guys got fired and their time there ran its course for different reasons. But that doesn't mean now we forget about them and we drop them out of being top 15, top half of the league coaches. I mean, Ron Rivera got a job in 2 seconds. That's how coveted and a good coach he was. Mike McCarthy obviously coaching Dallas. We forget. It's like you want to forget and you want to catapult guys if they're doing it for 1 year. I can't jive the Mike Vrabel 1 year and then look at what the success that, and the long-term success both Rivera and McCarthy have had and go, oh, yeah, absolutely, I take Vrabel. To me, that's nonsense. Same thing with Kyle Shanahan.
Right, exactly right. I mean, if that were the case, we would jump up Matt LaFleur. He had one good season. He got to the NFC Championship game in 1 year at the helm.
Right.
So why do we reward Kyle Shanahan, but Matt LaFleur's not in the top 13? I think that's silly. Isn't it funny, though, that neither you nor I are going to argue that Bill O'Brien's not in the top 13? Bill O'Brien wins the division every single year. He's not even close to a top 13 head coach of the NFL.
Bill O'Brien's the ultimate asterisk head coach. If he's in any other division, is he winning the division every year? I mean, he found the perfect spot. The perfect ownership giving him a leash, the perfect division. Bill O'Brien, for a guy that comes off that Belichick tree, to me, has found his way into the perfect little niche where he's going to have that job for a long time. Nobody truly questions him, and he's in a situation where he's going to, by default, win enough. When, ultimately, every time you see Bill O'Brien step on the field versus another big coach in another big moment, it's not the talent that gets dismissive. It is his ability to coach and navigate a game that is an absolute unmitigated disaster. So there's no way I would put him in the top 13.
It's funny also that you mentioned Mike McCarthy. McCarthy won a million divisions, went to the playoffs a million times, went to multiple NFC championship games, has won a Super Bowl, and is not mentioned in the top 13 by CBSSports.com. Yeah. Dan Quinn was inches away from winning a Super Bowl as well and wouldn't be anywhere near the top 13 if you ranked your coaches. Where are you standing these days on Doug Marrone? Because once upon a time, you said that Doug Marrone might have been the second best coach in the NFL.
Look, this is almost going to rub me off because of your last segment where you went out of your way to talk about people you love that are idiots that are nice guys. So yeah. I want to try to not be that target of you and plant the Doug Marrone flag as the second best coach in the AFC again. Okay. I have backed off my Doug Marrone stance after last year. I had high hopes for him with Nick Foles. I still don't think Doug Marrone's a disaster. I still think what he did that year, getting the Jaguars to an AFC title game with that locker room and Jalen Ramsey and all that, I think that's a more impressive coaching job and a more impressive year than Vrabel had last year. So I'm Marrone's going to still somehow find his way into the 10 to 20 range for me.
Ooh, now, okay, so this is interesting. Why do you think that 1 year by Marrone was better than what Vrabel did? Both of those guys came out of the AFC South. Both those guys were wild card teams. Both those guys ended up going to the AFC Championship game.
I'll tell you, it starts with, number one, Blake Bortles or Ryan Tannehill. Ryan Tannehill, I know, has not had that long track record of success before then, but even in Miami, I still thought Ryan Tannehill was an adequate enough quarterback. Blake Bortles has never been that. So to be able to get to that spot, have the lead versus New England as well, a better New England team than the Titans beat, I thought was huge. Number two, the Titans kind of seem like a fun locker room, a team that really loved each other. And I'm not saying the Jaguars didn't, but the Jaguars seemed like a lot of guys were about themselves. And that whole aura around that Jaguar team, it really starts with Jalen Ramsey, where that's a lot of egos to manage, and a lot of egos maybe that of guys who had egos before they deserved to have egos, if that makes any sense. And I just think that 1 year with Doug Marrone in Jacksonville, to me, is one of the best coaching jobs I've seen in the last decade in the NFL. And ultimately, if Doug Marrone finally had himself a true franchise quarterback, which is why I was excited for the Nick Foles thing that never materialized, I think we would find the best of Doug Marrone. And I really do think that the X's and O's of Doug Marrone and how he handles a locker room would be there and be impressive enough to be in the top 15 of an NFL coach.
Still got a job. He still got a job. He might not have one after this year. He's got to deliver something this year, but he's still got a job. When we come back here on the show, Mraz went on Houston radio and discussed baseball, pizza, and barbecue, and we hear another radio show rip Peter Schwartz. It's part of Soundcheck next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Let's start with Ron Rivera, a member of the 85 Bears, who was on the score in Chicago, 670 the score in Chicago, our CBS Sports Radio affiliate there, on the McNeil and Parkins show, and discussed Cam Newton becoming a member of the New England Patriots.
He's a guy that always tried to do things, I think, because he's felt the pressure. He felt the pressure of being the number one pick. He felt the pressure of having won the Heisman Trophy and being the number one pick. He felt the pressure of being a black quarterback, you know, and with all this stuff that's been heaped on him. And he's really had to find his way through it. He's done a great job with it.
I do think there's been obstacles put in Cam Newton's way. And look, Cam Newton wasn't completely embraced in a community that probably was a little put off. At least some people, we saw some letters to the editor by the flamboyant nature of a black quarterback like Cam Newton. And that Cam Newton had a lot of scrutiny on him in college and about whether he got paid or his dad got paid or whether he was leveraged by his father to go to Auburn from Florida. And there was always a lot of scrutiny and speculation and criticism around Cam Newton. But Cam never quite became the future Hall of Famer that maybe he could have projected to be, but he was always a really good quarterback and an NFL MVP and went to a Super Bowl. And how much differently maybe would we look at him had he won that Super Bowl? I think Cam Newton has a second act in him, and I hope that his body holds up because he's a really fun player to watch. And Cam's energy and persona has always been really great when he wins. It has not been good when he loses, and that's hurt him a lot, and I've criticized him. I thought his performance in the post-game media after his Super Bowl loss was embarrassing for a franchise quarterback. I think you do have to understand when you're in that position that you have to handle losing the same way that you handle winning. It has to be professional. You have to give off a vibe of professionalism and accountability. And to do Superman and to celebrate and to take pictures on the sideline when you win, but when you lose, play a petulant child is a bad look. But aside from being kind of a bad loser, I think he's been really great for the NFL. And let's see if Cam Newton has a second act with the New England Patriots or somewhere else. Mraz joined Landry Locker yesterday on Sports Radio 610 in Houston. And they had him on because Mraz likes to take his shots as a Yankees fan at the Astros. And in Houston, they're defensive about the Astros. And here is their back and forth on what else? Not baseball, but food.
We need to make like a show bet or something like that on the Astros versus the Yankees this year. We need to figure something out, figure out some sort of price. I don't want any of y'all's crappy pizza. So let's not make it a food bet. I don't want to send any of our prize barbecue your way. So you can, keep
barbecue.
That, you can keep that
pizza.
You're not
pizza. Royal fans.
You keep that pizza.
Regardless, we could all agree on this, right? No team benefits more from this weird season than the Astros. No fans to boo them. They don't have to come deal with real teams. They get to tee off on the Mariners or the Texas Rangers. No team benefits more than the Astros, and now they're going to back their way into the playoffs. But you better be prepared, because if you get lucky enough to get to an ALCS, things are going to be different this year. There's no more banging on the trash can, no more buzzers going off. It's Gerrit Cole mowing you down. Zach Greinke throwing up all over himself, and it's now finito, and now we know the Astros can't handle business without cheating.
I'd like to know, Mraz, what was your response that you got on social media from Astros fans after that spot?
Not happy, baby Yankee fan, show us the emails, you guys cheated too. I had to mute a lot of people in Houston yesterday. Also, I didn't realize fully that that's how that sounded either, because I thought I was on a clear line, and now it sounds like I was in an air traffic control tower as well, which I'm sure was not made for a good spot.
You know, the worst thing that you said to them was, you're not Royals fans.
Yeah.
That Houston barbecue isn't Kansas City barbecue.
Well, look, with all due respect to anybody in Texas and their barbecue, they're not. They're not Kansas City barbecue. So when you want to come knocking New York pizza and tout your barbecue, at least we know we have the best pizza in the country. When you're basically second or third fiddle in the barbecue game, I don't want to hear you touting your barbecue. I'm sorry.
Houston barbecue is amazing. I've had much of it, but there is nothing like Kansas City barbecue. That is the ace of all aces. Finally, yesterday on WFAN, Boomer and Geo, of course, Greg Giannotti once co-hosted this morning show here on CBS Sports Radio. Here is Geo with Boomer Esiason after Peter Schwartz posted a picture of his high school graduation photo on social media, it set the guys off.
I swear, if somebody told me that this was like 1940, that his high school picture was taken, I would have believed it.
I also saw him tweet Governor Cuomo asking when East Meadow deck hockey could start. His Twitter account is just the best. I can't get it. Like, imagine if Cuomo actually saw that and, like, during his press conference. It's like, all right, here's an update on the numbers. Where hospitalizations are down. And more importantly, I got a tweet from Peter Schwartz, Schwartz on Sports. And we are, as of today, opening up deck hockey in East Meadow. Like, Peter Schwartz wasn't doing that. He actually wanted an answer on East Meadow deck hockey from Governor Cuomo. Like, he was 100%. He wanted that. And it's amazing how many people are on the same page with this Peter Schwartz Twitter account. I've got several texts of people saying, wow, thank God you brought this up about the Peter Schwartz Twitter account, because I also enjoy it very much so. But Peter Schwartz, he's got that Schwartz on Sports podcast. I remember when I was doing shows on the network, he had on pop star Tiffany, because she was doing the halftime show at the Long Island Lizards lacrosse game. And he had her on to talk about it. And it was the greatest thing I'd ever heard in my life. And then to top it off, I found out later she did the performance and her dressing room got robbed during her performance.
Well, Schwartz is now becoming a major player in the sports media world, as he's the subject of yet another radio show's ire. I think Gio went easy on him there because he could have really laid into Schwartz about all of the awful things that happened from Schwartz's social media accounts, which we document on a daily basis. That is your sound check. Mraz is our Schwartz Twitter insider. He covers the beat for us. He's kind of like the Brian Windhorst or Dave McMenamin or Ed Werder of the Schwartz Twitter sphere. What's the latest? Why did Schwartz post a picture of himself from high school the other day?
Because he's Peter Schwartz. So the only thing I could gather, because I did a little deep dive, DA, after this, obviously, because I am the Peter Schwartz beat writer, and I thought maybe there was something I was missing where there was a big wave on Twitter of your high school photos and this. Now, the truth is, about 6 weeks ago, there was a very big pitch on social media, whether it be Twitter or Facebook, to put a picture of your high school photo in support of all the high school seniors this year whose graduations have been thrown off. However, that was 6 weeks ago. Nobody prompted, or there's been no push for anybody to put up your high school picture and then compare it to a picture now. So I don't know why Pete did this. It doesn't jive with anything going on. But he put this up, and also brings the question, for a guy to his mid to late 40s, I'm assuming Pete's there, his high school picture, DA, think about this. You were just talking about going out for Tyson's fight when you graduated. He's not that much older than you. It looks as if he might have been Grover Cleveland's vice president. I don't understand if maybe knowing Pete, he didn't want to pay for the color prints or what's going on, but it is made to look like Pete went to high school during the filming of the movie Wild Wild West, and not, you know, maybe just 30-something years ago.
It does look like it's a high school graduation photo from the 50s. Like, he would fit in with, like, you know, a bunch of 50s soda shop kids. But I don't know. I think he's actually older, much older than I am, because I'm a high school graduate of 97. I think he graduated high school in the 80s.
Okay. But even if he graduated high school in the 80s, I mean, have you seen a Lakers-Celtic NBA final? There's plenty of color there to go around. It doesn't make any – like, we've seen 85 Bears documentaries. They don't look like Peter's high school picture. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. And also, he posts a picture, and with all due respect to Pete, I think what really got people wasn't even how old the picture was. It's how old he looks now. Pete looks like Hubie Brown ate Hubie Brown. We just talked about Hubie Brown being 86. That's how Pete looks there. So everything gets thrown off in a big way. People look at that picture and go, wait, you just have a son going into high school? Wow, late in life. Like, no, he didn't have his kid late in life.
Well, look, I mean, sometimes when you're throwing down 3 liters of Diet Coke every single day and smashing munchkins and mini muffins and pastry cakes all day long. Sometimes it takes a toll on you, Mraz. You better watch out.
Like we said, and this is why I'm not retiring, death within a year. And the poll question again, would I gain 50 pounds? The answer is absolutely. I'm well aware that I could end up going down that road. I'm thankful I gave up soda for now. But who knows? I could retire and be just chugging big gulps, double big gulps like nobody's business. I'd like to say that my 2 years of following Peter Schwartz around like I was the Hard Knocks cameras have told me what I need to do and not to do. Like, I can only push my body to a certain limit. The idea – I truth be told, DA, I have never smoked a cigarette in my life, and I never will because my mom did growing up, and I hated the smell, and I never wanted to do that. I think to a certain extent I will never drink that much soda again because I watched Pete do it for 2 years, and I saw his hip deteriorate. So there are certain lessons you can learn in life from watching people.
Now, the poll question today is – will Mraz gain 50 pounds or more in retirement? So you can vote. You can vote. Vote on Twitter, DA on CBS, CBS Sports Radio, or on Facebook, facebook.com/TheDAShow. It does beg the question, guys. You know, let's see. Schwartz's hip deteriorated to the point where it fell apart on the beach 2 summers ago, I believe. I think it was 2 summers ago,
yeah.
So 2 years ago. Let's ask, you know, Ed Werder. Is
you know
it
what?
2 years ago?
DA, we were just talking about G-Chat. We need a forgotten classic for tomorrow. Maybe I should call the paramedics from Jones Beach to go over the 2 years since that football play.
So Schwartz's hip just gave out under him when he was running a play with his kids on the beach 2 summers ago. And let's just say that Schwartz is 10 years older than I am and 11 years older than Bogish. Could you imagine, guys, in 8 years, if I was running a play on the beach and I went Bo Jackson, my hip just gave out and turned into dust? Dog. That's what we're talking about here for Pete.
Brutal. Brutal.
Could you imagine? I mean, I guess Tua has had the injury and he's younger.
Well, but he had people.
You know what? Let's get Dr. Chow on. Let's get Dr. Yeah. Chow on.
Hold on a second. Tua had 2 SEC defensive linemen twisting him to the ground. Schwartz had a mini sand dune get him. There's a huge difference.
But it was a flea flicker, Bogus. The flea flicker, it's a very dangerous play.
Remember, Robert Edwards once blew out his ACL on the beach of the Pro Bowl. So that was
that was his hip. That was horrible.
And also, this is where we forget to do forgotten classics. We found out months later, I think we still forget to this day, it happened at the beach, but it didn't even happen on the sand. It happened on, like, playground rubber. It was in front of a swing set.
Oh, really? I thought it was on the sand.
That's what we thought for years, and then in talks with me, we later found out.
So we thought for years.
Until the 30 for 30 came out.
Yeah, right.
We later found out they didn't even pay to get all the way on the sand. They just stayed on the playground part of this, and it was like the rubber mats, and they were running towards the swing set where they ran the play, and boom, there was the old turf monster.
That was what we thought up until the Pizza Hut delivery guy from Salt Lake City gave us a different story on Peter Schwartz.
And by the way, you think about Pete with the hip and then the hand going through the fence grate that let him go to the vet. Pete's had a rougher 2 years with injuries than Giancarlo Stanton, which is hard
it's
to
true.
Do.
It's true. His medicals are terrible. Especially in pandemic. That's why he can't cover NASCAR is because you can't fly him in right now and get a clean medical sheet on him.
And ironically, both never have to pay for a meal.
Front offices around the country are like, look, we'd love to hire Schwartz, but right now we can't get a clean medical on him during a pandemic.
Rules are rules, Pete. Sorry.
I can't clear you.
Tiffany.
All right, Andrew Bogish has our headline this morning. AB, good morning.
Hello again. These headlines are sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. Call or click today and find out if we could save you hundreds on your car insurance. Baseball gets back on the field today with summer camps opening around the country. Yankees GM Brian Cashman is optimistic about everyone's chances.
Ultimately, we're in it to win it, and I think everybody else, you know, should be feeling the same way, and especially in a shortened season, that means, I think, it heightens the ability for anybody to really take a shot at the title.
Yeah, probably not the Pirates, at least. Cashman also discussed handling COVID-19 this summer. Cubs GM Jed Hoyer said the same thing later in the day. Teams will not be allowed to tell us which players tested positive. We just get to guess when a player has been missing for a few days and isn't on the usual injury list. Both GMs pointed to HIPAA rules, but I keep reading how that doesn't actually apply to them. It only applies to an actual doctor, but still, MLB's plan apparently is not going to be, or is going to be, not to tell us who tested positive. The Tigers and number one pick Spencer Torkelson have come to terms. He gets a record $8.4 million signing bonus and a spot in their 60-player pool for these summer camps. And we got our first baseball trade in 3 months yesterday. The Padres getting speedy infielder Jorge Mateo from the A's for a player to be named later. Sadly, minor league baseball formally canceled all its seasons yesterday. Pat O'Connor is the president of the National Association of Professional Baseball Leagues, and he says more than half of the 160 minor league clubs need immediate financial help from somebody. The New Orleans Pelicans say three unnamed players have COVID-19, and the Nuggets practice facility has reportedly been closed since Saturday because of two positives within their 35-member travel party for Orlando. Commissioner Adam Silver told Time Magazine yesterday he remains, quote, pretty confident their Orlando plan will be okay despite the spike of cases in Florida. Kansas City Chiefs D lineman Chris Jones invoking the name of Le'Veon Bell, saying he'll sit out the coming season if he doesn't get an extension. He tweeted that in response to an NFL Network discussion of his negotiations. Jones has the franchise tag, which is worth $16.1 million, but reportedly wants $20 million annually. Only two D linemen get that right now, Aaron Donald and DeForest Buckner. From college football, North Carolina gets its second five-star commit from the class of 2021. It is Virginia cornerback Tony Grimes. Ohio State, Texas A&M, and Georgia were the other finalists. And NHL players will get nearly $300 million in signing bonuses today as scheduled. The league and union reached that agreement instead of delaying those bonus payouts. The Maple Leafs have to write checks for roughly $60 million today. $15.2 million go to Austin Matthews, $14.3 million to Mitch Marner. DA, back to you.
Thank you, Bogues. Tonight at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific, take a look back on football history. Relive the epic moments and career-defining achievements as the Jets take on the Steelers in the 2010 AFC Championship game, one of the Rex Ryan years. Don't miss NFL Rewind on CBS Sports Network.
CBS Sports Spectacular, yeah!
We were talking about where Mike Tomlin ranks. CBSSports.com ranked Mike Tomlin the 7th best head coach in the NFL, which I took umbrage with. They put Pete Carroll at number 8, put Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay, the Wonder Twins, ahead of those guys. This was the last AFC Championship game Mike Tomlin has won. That was the last time the Steelers were in the Super Bowl. When we come back here on the show, we've got your champ and your chump and an ode to minor league baseball. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Only one letter separates them, but they're galaxies apart. One is a true winner. One is a pathetic loser. This is DA's champ or chump.
Your champ this morning is minor league baseball. For the first time in 120 years, minor league baseball will not be played this summer. And I've talked about this many times. I have such a warm spot in my heart for minor league baseball. It is where I began my career. My first internships were in minor league baseball. I was basically a press box gopher for the single A New Jersey Cardinals. Essentially, I was entailed with getting either a hot dog or a hamburger for the broadcasters, or both, and then handing them the cards of the sponsorships in between innings. I also was an intern at the single A Hudson Valley Renegades. I was doing lighting along the first base side for the fan cam. I held ropes and wires and electrical cords. That's what my internship was. And the smell of peanuts and the smell of beer and the sound of minor league baseball will forever be part of my DNA. I just love it. I had the chance to call a couple of games for the Fort Myers Miracle in the Florida Gulf Coast League, single A for the Minnesota Twins. And just being around those guys, being in that locker room, in that clubhouse, I just love. And it is such a shame that we don't have minor league baseball this year. And I understand that there's a financial commitment that has to be made and that this is a pandemic and that a lot of things have to be cut out and people can't go to games this summer, so you're losing attendance. And so I largely get it, but it still sucks. It still sucks that this summer America doesn't get those small town baseball experiences that so many people use as their leverage point into a baseball game. I mean, a lot of people don't live close enough to a major league ballpark. There's a lot of part of the country that lives more than, say, 2 or 3 hours away from Major League Baseball. And so going to minor league stadiums is their baseball experience. And I know that feeling, and I love minor league baseball, and I hope it comes back next year okay and healthy. I'm pessimistic of that, unfortunately, because baseball doesn't seem to be wanting to do what it takes to float it anymore, and that there's going to be a real reckoning here financially for minor league baseball. But at least today, when they've shut down the leagues for this summer, I just want to put it out there how much I love minor league baseball, how much I value minor league baseball, and how much I think it's important to this country. I just think it's really, really important to make sure minor league baseball exists and is healthy. So minor league baseball, for all of the memories and all of the wonderful days and crazy promotions and crazy jerseys and just a great night at the ballpark, you know what? I salute you. You are the champs this morning.
That's DA's champ.
In fact, I've had multiple new Nomad episodes of my minor league stops. One, I went back to the Hudson Valley Renegades and spent a day there, and it was just amazing. The other one, I was the PA announcer, the public address announcer for an independent baseball league and the Newburgh Black Diamonds in the summer of 1998. And that was a hootenanny, let me tell you. That was a league that I don't think exists anymore and a team that definitely went under like a year after I was there. And I went back to the press box to relive some of that. You can watch that as part of my Nomad episodes, my series, The Haunted Press Box of Newburgh Black Diamonds, and that's available on YouTube. My chump on the morning is going to be Major League Baseball's inability to let us know who tested positive for COVID-19. I understand HIPAA laws, and I get that you want to protect players, and they've got a union, and look, I'm all for that. But Brian Cashman admitted yesterday that guys are just going to be out, and you're not going to know that they're out because of a COVID-19 positive, but you're just going to have to guess. That people, media, and fans will just have to speculate. You would have to use your journalistic superpowers to determine if there's anything there or not. And is this where baseball wants to go? Where it's better to just have a guy out who seemed healthy, who had been on a 10-game hitting streak, pulled out for 2 weeks, and we're just supposed to not know why and just speculate? Is that really a better solution to all of this? I find it to be a weird solve by Major League Baseball and the powers that be. We're going to have players that play really well are suddenly taken out of the lineup. We're not going to know why. It's going to be, what, non-baseball reasons? And we won't know if they're being disciplined or what type of illness they're going through, and we'll just have to assume that these guys are testing positive for coronavirus. That doesn't feel like the best way to approach this. That is my chump.
That's DA's chump. Class is now dismissed.
Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's on top of what Geico already saves you. So what are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. We have done you guys a solid here, which what we're trying to do on a daily basis is do you a solid. And we have pushed away from the table of crappy sports movies that we do somewhat ironically and gone into good sports movies, or what are supposed to be good sports movies. We kind of unanimously thought that The Natural sucked. But this year, or this week, I should say, we're doing The Sandlot. And you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody that thinks The Sandlot isn't a great sports film and a great baseball film. And during a summer where minor league baseball is on the shelf and kids aren't allowed to congregate as much as they used to just go out and play ball. It was kind of the perfect film to do this week and for 4th of July. And so coming up here next, we'll do part one of our breakdown of The Sandlot. And then in hour number four, we'll do part number two of our breakdown. And for the PGP, the Permission Granted Podcast, some cutting room floor analysis of The Sandlot as well. So if you, like us, love The Sandlot, you'll want to stick around straight ahead for Mothership at the Movies, part one. That is coming up here next on a wonderful Wednesday aboard the Mothership. This is the DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.